Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I am John Schmelk. The man next to me is Lance Metal. The phone number is 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. If you want to talk to us that way, you can. Giants and Chiefs getting going on this Sunday, 1 o'clock at MetLife Stadium. Giants looking for their first home win of the 2017 football season. And Lance, we'll get to some of the ins and outs of the game and preview it in just a second, but I thought we should start with the talk last week in the locker room from head coach Ben McAdoo. Apparently there was a fairly serious team meeting in the morning in which Ben McAdoo just played back some film for the guys of some plays that were less than positive. Apparently also played some positive plays back as well to show this is what you should do. But there seemed to be a pretty, as Ben McAdoo put it, plain talk between players and coaches first thing Wednesday morning, which is the first time the players were back in the building since their loss to the 49ers.
After they had the previous day off, and he described it, John, as really an honest discussion, an open discussion, an opportunity for them all to really just get everything out in the open air, and he used X's and O's, I think, to help ignite that conversation. And, you know, DRC also spoke to the media as well as a number of other players, and when they elaborated on what was discussed, I thought when DRC said, listen, nobody ever wants to be in the midst of a film session and be called out or have your play up there on the screen. So I think it sort of put things in perspective, guys realizing that, you know, the effort needs to be at a certain level from a consistency standpoint if they want to start winning football games. And, you know, this was what Ben McAdoo thought would get the attention of the players. I know during the course of the press conference, he was asked on a few occasions, you know, do you think you got the message across? And his response was, well, you know, we're going to have to wait and see what happens on Sunday. That was his response. And, I mean, you're going to have to wait and see what happens on Sunday. You're not going to know until they put the pads back on. But, you know, this was, I think, a different approach, John, from perhaps what he has taken in the previous weeks to use the film. And you could talk about things all you want. Sometimes the visual aid sends probably the ideal message.
Well, we mentioned what a couple of the primaries said, Ben McAdoo and, of course, Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie. Let's first listen to Ben McAdoo. I kind of put some things together here as he summarizes what the film session on Wednesday morning was like with the full team.
We had some open conversations, some hard talk, some plain talk, some simple talk, played some film. We're brutally honest with each other. We'll see how the players respond. They had a nice day of practice today. You know, we talked about being disappointed, but being determined. We're blessed to have the opportunities that we have 7 more weeks. You know, I think it's a great opportunity. It's probably the greatest opportunity in my life. A lot of doubt out there, so we have a chance to flip the script last 7 weeks.
All right, that's Ben McAdoo, and this was Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie in the locker room. This was not straight through, folks. I edited some answers out, some questions out, to try to make it a little bit smoother, easier to understand. It is quiet at some points because questions are being asked, which aren't necessarily in front of the microphone, so bear with us. Here's about a minute of Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie in the locker room, and as Lance said, he was the one guy that really did address that team meeting on Wednesday morning.
You see it on film. You can't explain it so much. You know, you just got to own up to it.
Did he mention guys by name or just showing it on the...
Just showing it on film.
You think it would have helped if he had done this earlier?
I think it would have put guys at a different attention span, put us on alert. Like, damn, stop finna get caught. Because nobody want to be caught out. I don't care what to say. Nobody want to have that play up there when you got to come back in the locker room and everybody looking at you like you that guy. So I think it could have helped if it was done earlier or not, but at least it got done. So it's about being a pro, though. You know, you give guys a chance to be professionals and understand that they got to hold themselves accountable. You know, but at some point, you do got to step in and say, whether it's too early or too late, I mean, what's to say?
It seems like you've kind of emerged as a voice of reason for this team. You've talked about this team and what this team needs
to get done,
effort. How do you explain your role and how you've kind of...
You know, I look at myself as one of the veteran guys. You know, I ain't going to say too much. I'm going to lead by example. You know, I'm going to go out there and try to fly around and just be accountable and do it. And even if I do make a mistake, you know, own up to a mind and just be coachable. You know, just show them that way. I ain't a vocal guy. I ain't finna just go to a player. Ooh, ooh, ooh. All I'm going to say is just watch me, man. If I'm out there just giving effort, I know y'all can because none of y'all really older than me. So I just tell them just watch me.
And it's funny, and I think Art Stapleton had a good question because, you know, just a few weeks ago, Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie had gotten suspended. He took the blame for that. He took the onus on him for, you know, doing the wrong thing and accepting his punishment. He said it was fair. And now he really is emerging as one of the vocal leaders, at least to the media. He said he's not necessarily vocal so much in meeting rooms, that's not his way, but he was vocal, at least speaking to the media, about the impact that type of team meeting had, he thinks, with his fellow players. But we'll have to wait and see what the impact is on the field.
Yeah, he was asked who is a vocal leader if it's not him, and then he named JPP, he named Snacks, he named Jonathan Casillas as the three guys that jump out to him, guys that are willing to step in the locker room and sort of interact with players. Because I think one of the questions that we didn't hear from John was the media asked DRC, if you saw a player on the field that you didn't think was putting his full effort forward, would you take him to the side or would you go into the locker room and would you question or have some dialogue with him? And DRC said, you know, that's not who I am. I would try to bring a guy up as opposed to maybe point things out that I don't think he's doing well. And he said, I leave that to guys like Snacks, JPP, and Jonathan Casillas. But I do think some of the things that he shed light on were interesting. And it is interesting when you look about a 180 for DRC. A few weeks ago, we were talking about the suspension. We were talking about all of the limelight being put on him and perhaps some criticism. And now, a few weeks later, him putting things in perspective in the locker room and realizing things need to change in order for them to start getting better effort and turning production into wins.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, excuse me, a couple things that were maybe a little bit different about this particular film session. One, usually all the film work is done in the position group meetings. It's not done with the whole team in the main auditorium. That's how this was done this time. And as DRC said, you know, Ben McAdoo didn't, you know, point players out and then ask for their explanations, and they had a back and forth. He just showed the tape, highlighted the players to watch, didn't call anybody out, and everyone watches it. And as Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie said in another point there, you shouldn't have to do this if you're a coach. If you're in an individual meeting room and you're watching those same plays, right? And let's say, I'll throw out random examples of players that used to be on the team. Let's say you're Corey Webster, and you're sitting there, and they show a piece of film where you give up on a sweep play and you don't tackle somebody. If R.W. McCorders is in the room with you, a veteran defensive back, he's going to get on you a little bit, and he's going to make you feel like garbage for not trying hard when he's trying hard and Sam Madison's trying hard and Jabril Wilson's trying hard. And ideally, that's how this works. Clearly, because Ben McAdoo took this added step, he didn't feel like it was working the way it should, that the players weren't holding themselves accountable as much as they should. So he changed tacks, and we'll see if the defense, and I'll be more specific, in my opinion, this is my opinion only, the secondary, comes up with a better performance than they did the last couple weeks against the 49ers and Rams. Two offenses that don't have dynamic playmakers outside Lance, but manage to make big play after big play after big play after big play.
Well, and it goes back to the fundamentals. I mean, missed tackles, players getting out into open space, and then players who usually have the help, you know, not being able to come up and make the stop. You know, that's how you get not household names to turn into explosive players. And that's exactly what we saw over the last few weeks with respect to the Rams and the Niners, whether it be a Marquise Goodwin who has speed but is not known for lighting up the scoreboard, a Garrett Celek who is filling in for the injured starting tight end for the Niners. And then if you go to the Rams, Robert Woods hadn't even found the end zone before the Giants game. And coincidentally, he scored two more touchdowns the following week for the Rams against the Texans D. So maybe he's breaking out. But I agree with you. On paper, it didn't look like this was going to be a team that was going to perhaps wreak as much havoc as some of the other star-studded teams. But, you know, the NFL is not a paper league, John. We could talk about stats, we could talk about numbers, we could talk about players, and very rarely does paper always translate to the football field. The other thing that I wanted to add is I thought that you laid out nicely the fact that this was a different type of film session, but Ben McAdoo wasn't using it just to focus on the defense. He, from what I take away, was also showcasing offensive plays,
yes,
special
absolutely.
Teams plays, mm-hmm. defensive plays.
Sure.
It was to bring the entire team together and show all three facets what can be done to improve across the board.
And again, he showed good plays as well to show the players, look, this is when player X or player Y did the right thing, and look at the good things that happened.
Yeah.
So just something that happened yesterday. We'll see what the impact is on Sunday. Because, Lance, this is a whole nother animal. Look, the Rams had one of the top offenses in the league. They were second in the league in scoring heading into that game. The Niners last week obviously struggled most of the year on offense. The Chiefs come in here, and you're looking at a trio of weapons for the Kansas City Chiefs that probably is the best trio of weapons the Giants have faced on the offensive side of the ball the entire year. Kareem Hunt at running back, Tyreek Hill at wide receiver, and Travis Kelce at tight end. And when you watch Carl Banks doing strategy on Giants first and 10 over the week on an MSG, I had to go through, and I work with Carl on that, and I help pick him out plays and everything like that. I came up with maybe 6 or 7 explosive plays for each guy throughout the year. You know, some weeks I go try to find plays for players. I get 2 or 3 in calls to pick one of the 2 or 3. There was no sore shortage of big plays, Lance, and Andy Reid knows how to put these guys in a position where they can make not just plays, but big plays, something this Giants defense has really struggled with.
Well, I think what's interesting, John, it's not the same personnel, but the creativeness that Kyle Shanahan showcases to me is very similar to what Andy Reid will throw at you. They like to move players around, and they won't shy away from putting players in different situations and different spots on the field. For example, I remember when the Chiefs played the Eagles earlier this season, they ran a play in which Alex Smith shoveled the ball to Travis Kelce after the ball went into the hands of about 2 or 3 different players to catch the defense off guard, and it ultimately led to a touchdown. And it wasn't a home run pass, but it was a lot of movement pre-snap that led to the opportunities for Travis Kelce, and that he was able to take full advantage of it. Tyreek Hill is also an extremely dangerous special teams player. He returned the punt this season against the Houston Texans, so you don't just have to worry about him as a wide receiver. You have to worry about what he could do on special teams. The one thing that's interesting is, over the last few weeks, the Chiefs have taken a significant hit on offense. And what I mean by that is they have not been putting up the points at the same rate. They have not been running the ball as effectively. Now they've had the bye week, and Andy Reid, we know it's been well documented, is unbelievable with his teams coming off the bye.
16-2.
I mean, the numbers in terms of the record, and it doesn't matter what team he's coaching, whether it be the Eagles or the Chiefs, it's carried over. I don't know if it's philosophy, how he rests players, what he does to evaluate. Listen, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. It certainly has been effective, but it'll be interesting to me if Kansas City shows a number of different looks this week, given the fact that they want to get back to the offensive level that they were showcasing in the first 5 or 6 games of the season, which to me has for some reason dropped off, especially the running game, which is where they do a lot of their heavy lifting if you go back to the early stages of the season.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say how the offense has dropped off. Yeah, only 17 points against Dallas. They did score 29 against Denver the week before. They scored 30 against Oakland the week before that. But compared to what they were doing at the start of the year, you're absolutely right. They put up a 42 spot on Houston, a 42 spot on New England. And you're right, it has slowed down a bit the last couple of weeks. But they're still the fifth-ranked offense. Tyreek Hill has got to be a top-5 speed player from wide receivers.
Without a doubt.
I mean, just based on the eye test alone.
I mean, yeah. He's
fast. Travis Kelce, quite frankly, might be the best tight end in football right now. He's that good. And we all know Kareem Hunt is the leader in the clubhouse for Offensive Rookie of the Year. And he can not only run the football, by the way, he can catch passes. We saw him catch that deep seam route against the Patriots. They used the same play again later in the year, and it worked again. What's dangerous, I think, for the Giants here, Lance, is that the way they'll use Kelce and Hunt is that they'll try to get him on safeties and linebackers. And we know the Giants have had trouble in the middle of the field against guys like that. And the other problem we've seen the Giants have is carrying players across the field on those deep drag routes and crossing routes and such. And the Chiefs do that relentlessly. They'll challenge you deep with Kelce's speed. And by the way, I saw him put double moves on cornerbacks on game tape.
Slipping and sliding.
Not just safeties and linebackers now. Against cornerbacks. And he's beating them on double moves outside. So, in a season where the Giants have given up more big plays than every team in the NFL except for one, they're 31st. I honestly don't know who's 32nd. I'd like to know because the Giants have given up plenty of big plays. The Chiefs are 8th in the NFL in getting big plays. So that, to me, is a real danger area for the Giants. And it gets back to me, Lance, the formula. And the only formula that works for the Giants this week is quite straightforward and simple. Run the football and keep that Chiefs offense off the field as much as you can. And the Chiefs have the 29th ranked rushing defense. You can do it. You can move the ball on them. The Giants cannot get behind in this game. They have to get a lead, and they have to be able to move the ball up and down the field at the running game. If they do that, they have a chance. Otherwise, this thing could turn into a track meet real quick.
Offense being your best defense is essentially what you're saying, and I agree with you. And what's overlooked is the fact that the Giants have been extremely effective in running the football over the last few weeks. I know that, you know, people don't want to talk about it because it's been a down year, but they've actually been very effective,
the amazing
numbers and the eye test.
The amazing thing, Lance, out of all the things we talked about at the start of the year and how the first two games of the year went, where they averaged like 1.5 yards per carry or whatever it was, 2 yards, it was terrible. Right now, the best part of this Giants team on either side of the ball, in my humble opinion, is the Giants run game. I think it's the part of the team that's functioned the best, even through the losing the last 3 or 4 weeks.
I would agree with you. I think outside of that, Evan Engram is the other bright spot that I would note. Yeah. If you asked me about, despite the 1-8 record, what would you point to as positives? Those would be the two things. And I mean, the numbers show the fact that in 5 games, these last 5, they have run for over 100 yards in 4 of the last 5. And if you're not convinced with just the 100-yard totals, that's fine. Well, how about against the Chargers? They averaged 6.1 yards per carry. Against the Broncos, 4.6. Against the Rams, 4.3. And then the Niners game, 5. They had the rough game against the Seahawks. It got out of hand late. They had to abandon the run. They only averaged 2.7, and they had 46 yards. But we're talking about over 100 yards, John, and over 4 yards per carry in each of those contests.
I believe in the last 5 games, the Giants are top 10 in yards per carry this year. So the running game's gotten better. Now, unfortunately, the run game doesn't do you a lot of good if you're not stopping anybody on defense. If you're giving up 40 points per game, the run game can only, you know, do so much and can't lean on it. Help you so much because you're behind, you got to come back,
yeah.
And, you know, blah, 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 blah. But if they could just get a couple of stops here and establish the run and actually stick with it a little bit and not put the offensive line into, you know, pass protection mode on third and long a bunch or even, you know, down 14, you got to throw the ball, I think they could get a little bit of something going on offense here. But unfortunately, they're complimentary football. They haven't put themselves in the position to where they're able to do that.
Well, and this is also a game, forget offense and defense, John, as I noted earlier with Tyreek Hill, the Chiefs have one of the best special teams units in the NFL, and it's not just this season, John. It's one of those things that over the last few years, I remember we had the Chiefs radio play-by-play announcer, I think it's Mitch Holtis, if I'm correct.
Yes, you're right.
And we had him on during the offseason when we were previewing all the teams, and, you know, one of the things that I wasn't sold on, what do I always say? I say, you know, special teams touchdowns, defensive touchdowns are fluky stats. You can't go into a season, John, banking on that.
And I actually asked him that question.
Correct.
I remember
and
that.
He pointed out, I thought this was an interesting point. He goes, but wait a minute, guys. If you look at the numbers, they've actually consistently been scoring
and he
at
said,
that rate.
I agree with you. Generally, they're fluky. But
yeah.
Look at the Chiefs. I think it was all but 1 year out of the last 5, they were like the best or second or third best team in football in terms of defensive and special teams touchdowns.
So they've been able to hang their hat on that.
Yeah.
Whereas if they have an offensive rough game, they could say, you know what, we have our defense on our special teams that is going to lift us up. And then you look at the numbers this season. Well, Marcus Peters returned the fumble for a score. Justin Houston returned the fumble for a score, John, and Tyreek Hill has a punt return. You've got 3 defensive/special teams touchdowns in the span of 9 games. So once again, opportunistic football being brought to the forefront.
You know, I should have looked at my full chart here. Remember I asked you who I really want to know who the worst team in the league is in terms of allowing big plays? It's Chiefs.
Which doesn't surprise me because we were talking about this before the start of the show, and maybe we could get into
it a lot more.
The Chiefs defense goes under the radar because of some of their other positives, but boy, they've had a very rough season.
Yeah, 30th in the league. They're actually ranked only one spot better than the Giants, 29th against the run, 28th against the pass, the most big plays. You know, and look, losing their safety at the start of the year,
Eric Berry.
It's a killer.
Yeah, that
it's
was a rough one.
It's a killer.
Yes.
Marcus Peters is good. They had to bench one of their corners. And
yeah, they benched Terrence Mitchell.
And they've struggled. Look, their defense is not very good right now. I remember a couple weeks ago, and guys, we'll get to your calls. I know you're holding. We'll get to you. 201-939-4513. There was a stat on Monday Night Football showing the Chiefs' offensive ranking as opposed to their defensive ranking over the past 4 years. And 4 years ago, the defense was ranked like 2nd, so it was here on the chart. And the offense was up here because it was ranked like 27th. And over the last 4 years, the two lines have crisscrossed. And now the offense is 5th and the defense is 29th or whatever the heck they are. Yeah,
30th. Yeah.
So over the last 4 years, the Chiefs went from a defensive team to an offensive team. And it's just amazing how the transformations happen. But you're right. They're not playing as well. They're 6-3. They started the year, obviously, 5-0. So they've lost 3 out of 4. So they're in a bit of a funk. And we'll see if the Giants can build on a little bit.
Well,
anything else before I get to the
calls? Yeah, the one thing I just wanted to add, based on your point, because we're talking about the Giants, if they could lean on the running game, you know, they'd be able to cover up some of their defensive issues. But the yardage is not equating to points for the Giants, John. Whereas, why are the Chiefs able to hide all of those defensive issues that you mentioned? Well, Kansas City is 5th in yardage, but here's the kicker. They're 5th in points per game. they're equivalent, meaning the yardage they're getting is translating to points. So they're giving you 372 yards per game. They're putting that into 28 points per game. The Giants, on the flip side, they're getting 308 yards per game, which is 25th, which is not good, and that's only turning into 17 points per game. That's tied for 28th. So the yardage and the points is equivalent for the Giants, just like the Chiefs' yardage and points is equivalent, but it's good for the Chiefs, not so good for the Giants, and that's how you can get away with your defense for the Chiefs. They're giving up, in terms of total yardage per game, they're giving up 390 yards per game. But you know what? You can afford to do that when you're putting 28 points or so on the board every single game. That's the biggest difference.
What are their points allowed on defense, the Chiefs?
They're giving up 23.
And that's
tied for
19th. Look, they're 30th in yards, but they're 19th in points. So that you're right. That's a big plus difference where you can survive at 19th scoring defense. You can survive
that. That's manageable.
Yeah. 30th's not. If you're 30th in scoring defense, guess what? You're going to be a bad football team. If you're 19th, you can survive that. You can. All right, let's get to it. 201-939-4513. You guys have been holding a while. Let's make sure we get to you, and I'll take your calls in the order in which we receive them. So Tony in Washington, D.C. will lead us off. Hi, Tone. How are you?
Hey, gents. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you, too, Tony. What's going on today?
So three things. I want to get your opinion and ask some of the other co-hosts, you know, David Deal. You know, I'd love to talk to him someday, but
sure.
That's not a biggie. So as a fan that, you know, lives outside of New York right now, I have to track the team through the media. And it seems like over the last maybe at least 10 to 15 years, we as an organization have just been – I'm talking about the fans and the media – have just been hoping to get, you know, 9 wins in a wild card as opposed to trying to win the division on a semi-regular basis. I mean, am I just interpreting this, or do you guys kind of see that as the expectation of the team over the last couple of years?
Tony, I don't think that's the expectation. I think the result is what you're talking about. I think, since Eli Manning's been the starting quarterback, the Giants won the division twice. Does that sound right? Three times,
it
maybe?
Sounds about right. I'm looking over
there?
The list here. Let's see. They have won the division since 2004.
Three. Three.
Yep,
three
times.
So I knew it was either two or three. So obviously, Tony, that's not enough, and you want to have more division titles over that period of time. But the goal is certainly to win the division title. Now, you're spoiled, obviously, because two of the years where the Giants did not win their division, or one of the 2 years the Giants did not win the division, they happened to win the Super Bowl. They did finish in first place in 2011, which was a very, very weak year
down
for the
year.
NFC East.
I mean, we're talking
East,
about 500 football.
Yeah, it was a rough year for the NFC East. But Tony, I don't think that's the expectation. But you're right; that has been the result for the most part.
Yep, so I only say that because the GM was saying that maybe the players rested on their laurels last year, and last year was a great regular season. The 11-5.
Right.
Oh, yeah, this year they rested on their laurels from last year's success.
Right.
But you got to remember, and trust me, Redskins fans will not let me forget this. There's tons of times on where I am. Even though we won 11 games and went to the playoffs, we didn't win the division. You can't. You got to win that division on a regular basis before you can start resting anything.
Yeah, Tony, I hear you, but I can't get too upset about an 11-win year. The Cowboys won 13 games last year, and frankly, if they would have played their starters in the last game of the year, they would have won 14. So I can't get too mad about a year where the Giants win 11. The problem is that the Giants went too many years where they didn't get double-digit wins, and when you're not going to get – when you're not going to get 11-plus wins, it's going to be hard to win your division. And the Giants, since 2009, have only gotten 11 wins once. So I think that's the place where you can kind of levy a fair criticism.
Well, and here's the other thing to add. You know, you were joking, Tony, about hearing it from Redskins fans. First of all, if you look at this division overall, nobody's won back-to-back division titles since the Eagles won 4 in a row in the early 2000s.
That's when Andy Reid was coaching the Eagles with Donovan McNabb.
Exactly.
Right.
So I think that says a lot. So forget the Giants, Tony. My point is no team could position themselves to say that they've been constantly setting the tone in the NFC East because there's been so much turnover in terms of rosters and results.
So that's a good point.
I don't think the Giants are in any different position than the Eagles, the Cowboys, and the Redskins. Now, that being said, doesn't mean that that's a valid excuse and that the goals or the expectations should be set lower. That's not my point. My point is this is a division where consistency is very hard to maintain. That's my overall point. You can't overlook that given the fact that nobody's won back-to-back division
titles.
Tony,
you know, Lance makes a great point. I mean, we don't have it in front of us, but I'm sure if you look at it over the past 10, 12 years, I bet you the number of division titles for each organization is – I bet you the Redskins have the fewest. They probably only have one maybe over that time, and I bet you Cowboys have four, the Eagles probably have four or five, and the Giants probably have three.
Probably would be the breakdown, yeah. Just about. Because, I mean, the Redskins had that one year where they beat the Eagles late in the season. What was 2015?
That was with RG3.
Yeah.
That was the RG3 year?
No, well, with Kirk Cousins, they won the division too.
Okay.
Did they win the division that year?
I remember he beat
Philadelphia. He went into Philadelphia.
That was two seasons
ago. That was 2015.
Did they also win the division in RG3's rookie year?
With Alfred Morris.
Did,
I believe
right?
they did win the division that year. Correct, mm-hmm. Yes.
So I think those are
those are the two years that the Redskins won.
Right.
Yeah. What else you got, Tony? Anything else? All right. Looks
Tony.
Like.
Tony. Tony.
It's intense. Hello?
Yeah. Are you Tony, still there? What else you got, Tony?
I'm still here.
Okay. No, we were asking you if you have anything else.
So Paul was saying hello?
Yeah, we're here, Tony. We're here.
Okay. So Paul was saying he doesn't believe that the team is looking at drafting a QB. And he's getting that from the talking to people. But he personally, and he said this yesterday, doesn't think there's necessarily a tackle to be drafted either. So I want to hear your opinions on the draft. But if Paul doesn't think a QB or tackle's in the wings with a top four pick, who does he think we're going to draft? And my second question is the main debate in the fan land is, do we blow up the team or do we patch it up? And I want to hear your opinion on what we should do, but my opinion is I think we can patch it up. I think we just need to revamp the O-line, the linebacking core, and get our running back. I think that's really – and, of course, people got to play better and coach better. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think that we just need some more two more O-linemen, two more linebackers, and one more really good, talented back. That's only five players. I think those five players could do a lot for this current roster.
Thank you, Tony.
You
all right, Tony.
Later.
All right,
you got
let's talk about the draft first. Lance and I have not done our draft work. Let's get that out of the way really quickly. I work college football games on Saturday. Lance works college football game on Saturdays. We're not sitting home watching college games because we're working or we're traveling for the Giants. So let's get that out of the way first. Now, I have done preliminary reading of the people who do the work on college players. So there's – One guy that could be a top 10 offensive tackle, is my understanding, is Connor Williams, an offensive tackle from Texas. If memory serves me properly now, he suffered a season-ending knee injury a few weeks ago. So how is that going to affect his draft stock? I don't know. The Notre Dame Fighting Irish have a great offensive guard who's probably the best offensive lineman in the draft, but generally you don't see guards go in the top 10 or top 5.
Unless they're sold that they could transfer
to tackle,
position.
Does not, from what I understand, does not seem to be the case with this player. I don't even remember the kid's name. It's not McGlinchey. He's the tackle for Notre Dame. There's a guard for Notre Dame that is supposed to be a top 10 guy. Is there a top 10 tackle? Maybe the kid out of Texas. Maybe someone else jumps up. I'm not sure. We still have a lot of college football left to play.
And the combine and everything
else. Of course.
Yeah.
As for the drafting a quarterback, I don't know who Paul would draft. I think you should call up and ask him. I think that's a good question for Paul. And I don't think the idea that the Giants know on November 16th whether or not they're going to draft a quarterback, I think is very premature. I think it's kind of silly, to be quite honest with you. I don't think
they're necessarily thinking that way. Right.
I don't think anybody's sitting up in the Giants front office right now. Mark Ross and Jerry Reese having a conversation like on November 16th. In 5 months, before we actually go through all our evaluation, we already know we're not going to draft a quarterback. So I don't think those conversations have happened yet. If I was sitting in the room, I think quarterback's on the table, absolutely. I mean, Eli Manning's only got a few years left on his contract and probably his career based on his age. I don't think you know what Davis Webb is yet. So if you pick in wherever you pick and you think somebody is a legitimate franchise and you're convinced and your scouts and your front office and everybody, there's a real consensus. And, Lance, it's easy to have one guy think somebody's a franchise quarterback. If you have a room and everybody's bought in and everyone believes and you think this guy is going to be, your next Eli Manning or whoever you think it's going to be, I would have a lot of trouble passing on that guy when you don't have somebody in your locker room ready that you know is the guy. And I don't think right now you know that Davis Webb is the guy. You hope he is. You think he has the skill to be that guy. But unless you know, you can't take that off the table.
Of course. No, I think you got to look at all types of positions, including quarterback, even though Davis Webb, depending on the opportunities that are presented his way and the evaluations that are taking place, could very well be in the thick of things when Eli Manning does ultimately decide to hang it up. But competition's a good thing. So even if they drafted another quarterback, they could have Davis Webb and him compete ultimately for the starting gig. That's not going to necessarily hurt the team.
And it's not bad for an organization to have two good young quarterbacks, by the way. There's
because
nothing
you have
bad
some
about that.
Trade options or other opportunities. And that brings me to the other part, and I brought this up because somebody asked a similar question on Monday's show when Jeff and I were on, John, and I said, ultimately you got to wait and see what draft slot the Giants are going to be in. But when you're, let's say, in the top five, that's an attractive spot where you may field phone calls.
Of course.
And moving down, I think, cannot be taken off the table.
Of course not.
If it could present opportunities for players or more draft picks.
Nothing's off the
table. Of course.
Table.
But that's why the reason I'm bringing that up is because everybody's like, well, if they get number one or they get number two, they're going to be in a position to do what some of these other teams have done and grab a franchise quarterback or whatever it may be. But notice there were a number of other teams that have been in the one and two spots. And what have they done? They have moved down to capitalize and address multiple areas of a team.
And for some teams, that's worked out.
And for others, it hasn't. Cleveland
Correct.
Comes to mind, but San Francisco moved down, and they brought in two defensive players in the first
round. And now
round.
They've gotten Garoppolo.
Correct, with Reuben Foster and Solomon Thomas. So you're right. Everybody's going to take a different path, but yeah. when you're up high, and the Giants haven't been up high too often in
Not
recent history, it gives you the flexibility.
Yeah.
to maybe move down and address multiple areas of the team. Because, you know, we're right now looking at a 1-8 team, John, and I think we could point to quarterback, yes, could be something they want to look to towards the future, but quarterback is not necessarily going to help you next season immediately.
And that was the other point I wanted to make. This isn't something where you need to draft a guy and plug him in right away. You know,
yeah.
Eli Manning, unless something weird happens, is going to be on the team next year.
Absolutely.
And he's going to be your starting quarterback. So it's not like that's an immediate need, and that goes to his last question, which you should answer. Is this a blow-up-the-team situation or a slow patch-it-up situation? I don't know if you could really blow up a team.
It's like, hard to do that like, in the NFL
example,
to begin with.
Do I think the Giants are next year going to go and, you know, cut four or five defensive players, have $30 million of dead cap money, and, you know, purposely be bad for a couple years? I would be very surprised if they did that. Will they start retooling the roster quickly? Sure. But do I think this is going to be a situation where you see them cut four or five good veteran players just to get the money off and still have dead money? That's never been something the Giants have done. I'd be surprised if they didn't now.
Well, you took the words right out of my mouth. I'd be very surprised with that because I think what you can't dismiss is, remember, they brought in a lot of those defensive players simultaneously. So all of them have similar lengths of contracts, the Vernons, the Jenkins, the JPPs. I don't know if they would be in a position to then simultaneously want to say, you know, we got to revamp the entire defense. And then, as you alluded to, there's the financial implications. It's not like the Madden football games where you just get rid of the guy and you click the X button and then all of a sudden you have a free roster spot, John, and then you bring in the next player. There's going to be money that you're going to still have to pay off as a result of cutting players with large contracts. So I'd be very surprised if that happens. But at the same time, there's a number of free agents on this team, just like they've been in previous years. Could they make choices to not bring back certain players? That would not surprise me, and they may want to go in different directions with respect to that. But to say that they're going to look at all of the guys that they invested their money in within the last 2 years and take on dead money, and that's going to impact the cap not just for next year but years to come, that would be a surprising development if that came to fruition. So I don't see that coming.
And again, when we're not ruling it out, we're not saying there's no way they do it, but you're right. I mean, if you make those types of signings all in the same offseason, it's not like you can just cut bait and be like, all right, we're all good. It doesn't work that way.
Well, and remember, John, the whole point of making those signings simultaneous is to say, hey, we're going to build around these guys for the years to come.
And these aren't older guys. These are guys still in their
mid-20s. In their prime, exactly.
Right.
So we're going to say to ourselves, Vernon and JPP, we have our two defensive ends. We have Jenkins. We just drafted Eli Apple. The point is for those guys to grow together after just 2 years to then all of a sudden start to rebuild the whole nucleus all over again. I mean, that's very difficult. I mean, even if they choose to go in that direction, John, that's very difficult to do in the span of, you know, three seasons, essentially.
You don't see NFL teams blow it up and then bounce back in a year.
No, it takes sometimes another 2 to 3 years before they get the cap space, before they draft a few guys.
But then why is it worth then cutting the guys prematurely to take on dead money if it's still going to take you 2 to 3 years to rebuild anyway? Let them play out their deal so you don't have to deal
and
with
then
all
the
that money
dead comes
money.
Off the books cleanly.
Naturally.
Yeah.
Correct.
No, I agree with you. That makes a lot of sense.
And the Giants have never been a team that's carried a lot of dead money on their cap. They're very responsible, and Kevin Abrams does a fantastic job with that, where they structure these contracts as such where they don't – I mean, very rarely do the Giants cut somebody and have like – you know, you look at the Cowboys. They've cut guys before. They have like $12 million of dead money on somebody's contract and things like that. The Giants don't operate that way. That's not usually the way they operate. So that's my take on that. Again, who knows how the Giants will do it? I don't know, but based on history – that's how I would think they'd operate this way. Let's go to Darian in Delaware. He's up next. Hi, Darian.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're great, Darian. How are you?
Yeah, all right. You guys in the last call kind of touched on my point a little bit. But let me start off by saying, one, I love Eli Manning. I think he has another maybe two, maybe 3 years, solid years in him.
We agree.
As long as we get some good piece around him, offensive line, things like their solid running game, X, Y, Z, whatever.
Yes, sir. I agree.
But I just want to get you guys' opinion on Baker Mayfield. I was listening the other day. I know PDOT said that he was almost positive that Mayfield wouldn't be a Giant. But I think, I mean, well, I watched this kid a little bit. I'm not the biggest college football fan or whatever, but I watched him a little bit. I know Rosen and Darnold are the top guys kind of in the media spectrum, but I've always liked Mayfield over those guys. I mean, he can move out in and outside the pocket. He extends plays. He can fling it.
You know, Darian, honestly, I think over the course of the year, you're right. At the start of the year, it was Rosen, Darnold. I think in a lot of people's eyes that do this for a living, I think Mayfield might have passed those two guys at this point of the year, to be honest with you. I agree with you. I think a lot of people have compared him to, like, Johnny Manziel and things like that because, you know, he's mobile and all that stuff, and he had some off-the-field issues and stuff like that. I don't like that comparison at all. I think he can. From what I've seen, again, I haven't done enough work yet to say anything definitively, so I'm hedging here. Don't get me wrong. I think he can be an NFL quarterback. He can make all the throws. His arm strength is good enough. I think Baker Mayfield, if he's not a first-round pick and the top 15 pick this year, I'd be very, very surprised, barring any injuries and stuff like that over the next month and a half.
Well, and that means that somebody's going to get a steal if he's not a first-round pick, essentially, if he winds up falling. I would agree with you. I think he's much more polished than Johnny Manziel from watching him. And I also think that, you know, what happens with quarterbacks, John, is a lot of it has to do with the hype surrounding the team. Oklahoma is on the rise now.
Yeah.
They're in the top four. You know, they've regrouped after that rough loss early in the season. They're coming off an impressive victory over TCU, which is one of the most prolific offensive teams in college football. I mean, Mayfield made some throws in that game that were really,
off the charts.
I mean, you take a step back, you're like, wow. I mean, this kid, he'll take the big stage and he'll run with it.
60 yards in the air,
And we're not talking about, like, fluky throws. We're talking about a guy that understands the options on a play and can read the defense and execute. And a lot of it deserves credit towards the players that make the plays for him. You're only as good as the guys that you're playing alongside. So you have to take that all into consideration. But, you know, Mayfield, to me, was not an unknown commodity. What hurt Mayfield is, remember, he transferred, okay? He also had an off-the-field issue this offseason, which never helps your image. Now that he stayed out of trouble for the most part, I mean, I don't remember hearing anything about it.
No.
This college season, he stuck to the X's and O's. He's thrived. Oklahoma's doing well. It's no surprise. I mean, that's going to help the stock of a quarterback versus the other two, Darnold and Rosen, who we were talking about earlier this season. But those two teams have not been nearly as effective as Oklahoma.
And, Darian, by the way, one other thing real quick, and then I'll let you finish. There's real serious rumblings that Darnold's not even going to come out.
Correct.
That he's going to stay in school another year. And there's even rumors going around now that Rosen might not come out. So these quarterbacks might be waiting to be like, all right, we're going to be guaranteed the first or second pick in the draft here, and that's when we're going to come out. So there's a chance that Darnold and Rosen might not even be in the draft this year. And who knows? I mean, there's no rumors about this, but Lamar Jackson's got plenty of years of eligibility left too. You know, there's no guarantee
he comes out
either.
Yeah. You wonder, though, does the philosophy of these quarterbacks change when they see the teams that may be very high in the draft? You know, because this may not be a draft where, I mean, I granted Cleveland's still struggling, but, you know, if the Niners or the Giants are up there, historical franchises, do they say to themselves they like the coaching opportunities, they like the structure?
Well, do you remember Peyton? Peyton making his decision not to come out? Jet fans remember.
Well, but that's why I'm bringing it up.
I agree with you.
Think that quarterbacks don't look at who's going to be playing those last few games of the regular season and who's winning and who's losing. That may influence
where
they want to go.
Darian, sorry about that. Go ahead.
Right. Well, I didn't know that they might not come out. But if they do come out, which I already thought, my point was that if he does come out, I don't know what I just want to get your opinion on him personally and what would be the harm in, you know, considering we have a top pick, which I don't expect us to have anytime soon, and bringing him in and having him and Davis Webb compete for that backup job and being as though Webb has, you know, a year ahead of him. If Mayfield or whoever was to beat out Webb for the job, that would say a lot about both guys. And whichever guy doesn't make it, we could possibly wheel and deal him, you know, across the league for either some draft picks or some key guys we need, maybe offensive linemen or linebackers or whatever the case may be. And it's a team like the Broncos, Jacksonville, places like that. So I just wanted to get you guys' opinion on if we brought him in, had him and Webb compete for the job behind Eli for the next couple of years, and whichever guy doesn't make the cut, we could try to deal him for some picks or some key guys.
I have no problem with that. I think that makes sense.
I mean, I don't think that philosophy hurts, and I wouldn't disagree with where you stand on that, Darren, but I still go back to my point about what's the franchise's outlook. Does the franchise say to itself, there's a player that could come in next year and immediately get on the field and impact this team?
Thank you, Darren.
And they're much more comfortable going in that direction as opposed to taking a prospect that has potential but may not get on the field for another 2 to 3 years. You know, that's only something that the franchise can answer, John, from a philosophical standpoint.
And there's a good argument both ways. There really is. You know, there's one way to say, look, how often are we going to be picking in this spot?
Yeah.
You got to get your quarterback when you get a chance, the same way the Giants. Look, when the Giants drafted Eli Manning, they had a quarterback. They did.
They had Kurt Warner, yeah.
And they had Kerry Collins. They had Kerry. He was still a good quarterback. You know, Kerry wasn't thrilled when they drafted Eli Manning. But guess what? It was the best thing for the franchise. But I also understand if, you know, the front office says, we have Eli Manning. On the contract, he played well last year, played good enough. We don't need a quarterback. We love, you know, the wide receiver out of Alabama or the, you know, the running back out of Sparkly or Ridley or, you know, maybe like a cornerback out of somewhere that's really good or you like the pass rusher who the Giants like to draft, whatever.
Yeah.
And you say, you know, I can get that guy at 8 and get, another first and second round pick from somebody or something like that. I understand pulling the trigger on that too. So you're right. The beauty of it, as ugly as the season's been, and it's been ugly. We know that. You get a little bonus when you're hitting the end of April here and you have a lot of flexibility to try to get your team better in the future.
It's good to have options. But like I said, a lot of teams that have won those high picks have helped themselves by moving down and collecting more picks. Because here's the thing that you got to look at. If you could go into a draft, if you walk away with just a quarterback, John,
you hate
that's
taking
option
a quarterback
one.
Early. It's so funny.
I'm not a big fan of
no,
it.
You're
it
not.
Doesn't mean that.
Hilarious.
Doesn't mean that teams have hurt themselves doing it. I mean, listen, Carson Wentz, that was a great selection.
How do you think about the Eagles?
No, my philosophy is not across the board. It's just,
right.
I guess my feeling is, John, it's not my first urge. My first urge is not, oh, this team's got the first or second overall pick. Immediately, you got to turn to a quarterback.
No, you don't have to.
That's where I stand
and look,
on that.
And it's burned teams. It burned the Redskins train up for RG3.
Yeah.
For the Rams, it looked like it burned them
early
training
on,
up for
it
Goff.
Did.
Now it looks like maybe it was an okay move.
Well, because
to go
of Sean McVay's hiring and what he's done.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm trying to think of other teams that have traded up and it hasn't really worked out for them. But there are a number of teams. And it's worked and it hasn't worked. You know, teams have regretted passing on a quarterback for years. I guarantee you the Browns are sitting there, you know, thinking we could add Carson Wentz. We could add Deshaun Watson. They're stabbing themselves in the eye. I get it. But at the same time, other teams that have traded up, they've gotten burned in those situations.
Correct. So I mean,
we'll
I think
see.
There's pros and cons to that.
Sure.
And then I'm going to throw in the third wheel here is there's also the Raiders who got Derek Carr high in the second round, mm-hmm. and that's turned out to be quite well. The Cowboys with Dak Prescott, you know, Brady with the Patriots. I understand they're far and few, but there are teams that have been patient. They've waited. Kirk Cousins was drafted the same year as RG3.
I know people hate him, but Andy Dalton, another example.
Andy Dalton, yeah. I mean,
second
there are examples
pick.
Of quarterbacks that have been productive. Nobody's saying they're pro bowlers or they're going straight to Canton, but they've been productive with the talent they have surrounding them. So there's no one route that you have to take.
There isn't.
And that's the beauty when you have a high selection. You're going to have different flexibilities and different options. But it is attractive to say if we could walk away in a draft where we can target an offensive lineman, a wide receiver, a running back, and a defensive player versus just a quarterback, you know, that dangling out there, John, is something that I wouldn't easily dismiss.
Folks, this is going to be a preview of a debate between Lance and I have a feeling for the next 5 months. So buckle up. This is where it starts. Because I'll tell you what, we had the same debate 2 years ago, the year where two teams traded up to get Goff and Wentz. And we actually had this argument in the cafeteria. I remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Lance, if the Eagles believe that Carson Wentz is a franchise quarterback, you can't give up enough. Because let me put it this way. If a team now went to the Eagles and said, we'll offer you 3 first-round picks for Carson Wentz, you know what the Eagles would tell them to do? Shove off. No, thank you. So if you find the quarterback, there isn't a price that's too big. Problem is that there are no guarantees in life. and you can make that move, and then the whole thing can poof, right in your face if you pick the wrong guy. So that's where it gets tricky.
Well, and the big caveat that you threw out is if your entire scouting department and organization is on the same page.
And that's what I said at the start of my
answer. Correct. No, you did say that, but and I'm speculating, okay? I'm not saying that I have factual evidence, but I find it hard to believe that every single quarterback that has been taken that high in the course of NFL history, you can go back and look at the front offices, and they would say, oh, yes, the entire room was 100% sold on that quarterback. Cleveland may be the one that I'm pointing to right now.
Well, they weren't. We know that when Jimmy Haslam walked
so
in the room
there you
and
go.
Said, we're drafting Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, if you go around the table and everybody says, hey, thumbs up, go with the quarterback, then you know what? Then go with your gut. Go with your urge. You did your homework. If it works out, great. If it doesn't, at least you know you felt secure that you did your homework and you looked into him accordingly.
The quarterback reach is the problem. Is the teams that are desperate don't have and convince themselves that the quarterback's the guy for them. You know, where maybe they don't have the tape and the facts to really support that, but their hope upon hopes. You know, the human mind's an interesting thing. You can convince yourself of a lot of things that are quite frankly BS if you try hard enough. You really can. Humans can be convinced of a lot of stupid stuff if you want something to be true. You really can. Think about in your life, folks, when you look back at something, you're like, boy, why did I believe that? Whether it's believing in somebody and you really want them to be a good person, but then, you know, it turns out they're not, and you're like, boy, there were a million reasons to think this guy was a jerk. How did I not know that? You know, you take a job because it sounds great, but there were enough red flags before you took the job where you look back and, you know what, I saw A, B, and C before I took that job. I should have known it was going to be a disaster, but I so wanted it to be the right move for me, so I took it anyway. You can convince yourself of a lot of things.
Oh, you can, absolutely.
And same thing with scouting. It's the same thing with scouting. If you want a player to be an answer, you look for things to make you confirm what your hope is. And that's what I think separates a lot of the good evaluators from the bad ones, able to put all that stuff aside and just look at the tape, look at your facts, look at what your scouts tell you, and then make an unbiased opinion.
Which is difficult to do because we all have biases. So it's very difficult
to do that.
Yeah. And also, if you're in love with a player, to not go out of your way, as you alluded to cover up those issues simply because you're so enamored with the player. It's very difficult to put that aside, and that's why it's important to have multiple voices in the room, because the guys that are in love with a player can hear from the guys that are not so-so on that player. So it's healthy debate.
Absolutely. 201-939-4513. Ken in New Jersey, he's up next. Hi, Ken. How are you, buddy?
Afternoon, gentlemen. How's it going?
Hi, Ken. And by the way, I think we just set the record for the most draft talk in November ever on Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Oh, I think we ever.
Yeah, I think we might have. I like Baker Mayfield, but that's beside the point. I'm actually disappointed in some Giants fans, guys. Like, they're ripping that crap out of Ben McAdoo, and I know it's a disappointing season, but hey, guys, he's got young children. Let's calm it down a little bit. You know, it's just a game.
Hey, look, here's the thing, Ken. To me, if you want to criticize, you know, the football stuff and, you know, the job somebody's done, that's great. But you're right, there isn't any reason to get personal. Everyone's a person here. No one's, you know, there's no reason to take things off of the field. Stick to football when it comes to that sort of stuff, you know?
Exactly. I'm gonna pat him on the back. I like that they had that meeting yesterday. I wish it would have happened earlier, but I like that they had that brutally honest meeting. Every time I called in and said, you know, why are we in 11 personnel last year, like, all the time? Because you can only run so many plays out of that 11 personnel. And every time you guys told me, and rightfully so, who are you going to take off the field? My answer to that is, I don't care who comes off the field if it means we get the first down.
Right.
That's all I care about.
And that's fair.
So just come off the field. If you have to come off the field, come off the field. Because if you get the first down, you get to go back on the field. If we were running the football the way we've been with our star wide receivers there, this team would be leaps and bounds different. Now, I know that the defense has given up a lot, and I think what has a lot to do with that is we played week one in Dallas, then McAdoo trotted out 11 personnel. Bad things happened. I think the defense literally said, here we go again.
Ken.
And I think that's when they started to give up.
Ken, do me a favor. Don't take this defense off the hook. don't try to blame the problems on the defense on this offense. And look, the offense hasn't exactly even been explosive for all these points. They still haven't scored 30 this year, even before the injuries.
They haven't surpassed 24
and
points.
Ken, that's all fair, but that does not take the defense off the hook for allowing the most big plays in the conference,
correct,
for having blown assignments, for missing tackles, for not getting off the field on third down. And you know what? If that's really what the defense said, oh, man, the offense isn't scoring enough, what's the point of trying? You know what? Screw them. They scored they won 11 games last year and made the playoffs. To hell with those guys. I don't want them here if that's what their thought process is.
Well, and here's the other thing. Here's the other thing, Ken. We'll let you continue. That I want to jump in on that point. This is the same defense that – a lot of the fans, I'm not trying to point fingers, but everybody was crowning last season.
And us too, we did
because,
it too.
Because of making the consistent.
And
okay,
so
all right,
we,
so Ken,
so
everybody's admitting that because of all the defensive stops that they were making at the end of games. And I'll bring up the schedule from last year. I've done this on multiple occasions. The Eagles game, when Carson Wentz is driving late, they make the stop. Joe Flacco and the Ravens, they stop. They picked off Jay Cutler. All of those stops on games that could have easily went into the opposite end of the standings.
Heck, the Rams and the Bengals too.
All close margins.
Cowboys.
So now, all of a sudden, they're not making the stops this year, but people are now making excuses or pointing to the offense as to why they're not making the stops when last year was simply, hey, the defense is doing its job. You can't have it both ways. If you credit them when they make the stops, then it's fair to put them under the microscope when they're in the same situations the following season and they're not coming through. I don't see much of a difference.
Yeah. And one last thing, guys. I think we have too many lead-by-example guys on this team. I think we need the rah-rah guy, especially with the millennials. They love to talk. They love their team spaces and all that good stuff. But, you know, they need the rah-rah guy. They need the guy that's like Strahan, that's going to pump you up and tell you the final score of the Super Bowl when you're playing an undefeated team.
I agree with that.
You know, we need that. We need that guy that's going to light a fire under your butt. We need that guy, and hopefully we get him.
Well, but
thank you, Ken.
Appreciate the phone call, Ken. But I'm going to go back to my initial point, John. You know, this rah-rah stuff, which I understand it's convenient to talk about and pump guys up, and I think that's more for media chatter than it is for reality. The nucleus of the defense from last year is back. They went 11-5 last year. You're going to say without a rah-rah guy? Is that the point we're making?
Here's to me the difference, though. And I think this is where you maybe need somebody like that, is when things start going really bad.
And the fact that they weren't put in that position last year.
Yes. They were in some tough spots
last
year. I
mean, early in the season, they were in some tough spots. It did not start off great.
Well, they started the year 2-0, but then they lost 3-0 and went to 2-3.
Yeah.
But the wheels were never...
No, nowhere in this position. I'm with you completely on that.
It was never to where they were this year. And I think when... And I remember back to when the Giants started 0-6, right?
That was 13.
They had John Beeson, and they had... who had just arrived that year.
Correct.
During that streak. And you also had Antoine Roll on that team.
Yes.
And I thought those were two guys that led by example, yes, but they're also very vocal at their level of the defense. And I think those guys kept that group together on that side of the ball and kept them really engaged and, you know, trying, and it matters and all, you know, all that stuff.
You also had Tuck, if memory serves me correct, too, on that team, right?
I believe you still did have
Justin
Tuck on that team.
So, you know, that's
team.
Another
yes.
one that can't
exactly.
be overlooked.
So then you have one guy on each level of the defense.
Yeah, I mean, across the board.
And I think when things really start going poorly, I think it does help to have some of those guys to hold people together. And I don't think it's what people think where it's, you know, some guy getting up in the locker room every day and making some speech and everyone comes together and goes, yeah!
Like a movie scene or something like
it's
that.
It's not
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
It's the guys that do the little things, you know, in the meeting room that maybe they will call somebody out for making a really bad play in the meeting room on film during a film session. Maybe they'll organize everybody to stay late to do extra film work afterwards and, you know, convince them. Guys, even though, you know, we're 1-7 or 1-8, we're professionals. What are you going to do when you go home? Play Madden? Let's hang out for another 45 minutes and look at game film. Maybe those will give us a 5% better chance of getting a stop on Sunday. Let's do it. All right, cool. Let's do it. Yeah, Antoine's going to do it. Let's go and we'll do it. Now, maybe there are guys doing that this year. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know.
I don't know.
No, and I'm not sitting here trying to make excuses.
And
we don't know. And a lot of the players are not going to go to the media and tell them, hey, I told the guys to stay behind and have some snacks with us so we can watch more film.
And again, I don't know if Roland Tuck and those guys did it either or Beeson, but that, to me, was always the impression of the type of guys those guys were. And I think
that's fair.
When – and again, I'm not talking to a specific situation like we are now, but I think in general, Guys like that help when things go really bad the way they are this year. And that's my only point.
Well, but you know what? I guess my point is I don't equate that with – and I understand that maybe the initial point that Ken was making is I don't think you need a rah-rah guy to do that is my point, John. You need a mature individual that knows how to take a step back and put things in perspective. And, you know, from just listening to Casillas
– he seems to be that guy.
He seems to be that rock, okay? That rock on the defensive side that if somebody needs to provide some rationale to the school of thought, as I like to call it, Casillas is that one. And I thought
– DRC sounds like that guy
DRC
too.
I thought he was very open. You know, he wasn't trying to speak in generalities. He was giving you honest answers. But Casillas, I thought, was that way. And you were in the locker room, John, and we played a lot of his audio on the postgame. Casillas, I thought, gave some really solid answers to the media after a rough loss to the Niners. Where, I mean, his line – and I'm paraphrasing.
And by the way, he was outside the locker room with family. He came back into the locker room completely dressed with his bags, with PR
– To speak
to the media. And when he didn't have to, he was gone. He could have walked out like some other guys did. He came back into the locker room and did exactly what you're about to talk about.
So, I mean, I think that says a lot about the player. Now, whether or not we're seeing that type of behavior in the meeting room, we can only speculate. We don't know because we're not there. But
right.
The point I was going to say is, Casillas after the game, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have it word for word, but he said, it's sad that the defense he was talking about, they're now entering games looking to find ways to be competitive as opposed to find ways to win a game was his main point. I'm paraphrasing again. You know, don't hold me word to word. But, you know, that's an individual who's a member of a defense. He realizes they're struggling, and he's being very honest in terms of saying, hey, we got a lot of work to do. We're at the point where we got to find ways to be competitive to make the second half a back-and-forth type of affair if need be, as opposed to sitting here and talking about W's and L's in the standings. So I think that said a lot in terms of at least how he's able to take what's going on this season and maybe send that message to his teammates around him who may not see it that same way.
All right, Ty from Maryland. He's up next. Hi, Ty.
Hey, what's up, guys?
How we doing, Ty?
All right, real quick. First and foremost, let's congratulate Eli Manning for – prospectively passing his brother Peyton Manning for
this
the
weekend.
Most consecutive start.
And Ty, you know what? The good thing too is that once he passes Peyton, Brett Favre is so far off in the future, we don't have to talk about the streak anymore. Thank goodness. I'm tired of it.
Right. The second thing I wanted to talk about is one thing that I've noticed this year, as far as the defense is concerned, that they're not really doing a whole lot of like they did last year. It was Landon Collins was seeing a lot in the box as a box safety, and this year he's maybe like 12 to 15 yards away from the line of scrimmage. And y'all know his ball skills have improved since his rookie year, but let's keep in mind that that's what his strengths are. You know, staying close to the line of scrimmage, that viper position that Jabril Peppers was in Michigan. You know, keeping his eye on the linemen, seeing if their heads are dipping or if their heads are bobbing back, you know, recognizing the run-to-pass ratio and things like that. And I think we played more – maybe that's because Leon Hall was there last year and we don't really have that kind of guy this year to put – that used to be a cornerback and put him in safety now, and that enables Landon Collins to play near the line of scrimmage. But I think we really – it would benefit the Giants' defense, I think, for the next few games to come if we were to get back to doing that.
Yeah, Ty, I think that's fair, and I think one thing specifically to point out is that Landon Collins blitzed a lot last year and got home. He hasn't gone home in this year at all on the blitz, and he hasn't, I don't think, blitzed nearly as much this year as he has last year. That's just, I haven't actually looked at the numbers on that. That's just my impression.
I think that's fair, though, based
on
the eye test.
From watching the games. Yeah. And here's the other thing, too, Ty. He can play near the line of scrimmage, but I think teams are doing a better job of scheming their offense against the Giants, where even if he is that safety in the box, if you're the safety in the box, you're oftentimes going to have to cover one-on-one against tight ends and things like that. And I think teams have figured out a way to scheme a little bit to put him into more coverage situations than they did last year. And I think maybe you're seeing it more because the Giants aren't getting home quite as much with the pass rush, and quarterbacks are having more time to kind of pick that area of the field apart down the field. You know what I mean?
I agree with that. The next point that I wanted to make, and my final point is, question really. I wanted to know what the status is of JT Thomas, as well as the players that we just brought in, Greco, the guard from Cleveland, as well as Akeem Ayers. I want to know
linebacker.
What their contributors are going to be the upcoming games. Are they going to make an immediate impact, or we're looking more of them making an impact next year or not? I just wanted to get some clarification on that. And thank you, guys.
Thanks, Doc.
You got it. Well, as far as next year, I mean, I'm assuming most of these guys are only under contract for the remainder of the season, and they're going to be free agents. So, I mean, that would be pure speculation about whether or not they would be in the team's plans moving forward. Greco, I mean, right now he's trying to understand the jargon and the language of the Giants' offense and the cadence of Eli Manning. I don't anticipate, unless, obviously, due to injuries, we're going to have to see what the practice report is like today and tomorrow. I would be surprised if Greco is going to come in immediately and be inserted into the offensive line. I think he's more of an insurance policy, given the fact that Pugh and Fluker are both dealing with injuries at this stage. As far as what Akeem Ayers could do, the interesting thing about Ayers is Ayers actually was on the Patriots in 2014 when Patrick Graham, who's currently the Giants defensive line coach, was the Patriots linebackers coach. So there's actually previous experience of the two of them working together. But, you know, same thing. To expect him to come in week one and have an expanded role, I don't know if I'd go so far. I think, like Greco, he's an insurance policy, John, because you've got Keenan Robinson that just went on IR. Devon Kennard was banged up last week. B.J. Goodson mispracticed the other day. You know, they need the bodies at this point. Kelvin Shepard got hurt in his first game back. So, you know, That's reason why they brought in these two players. It's really a numbers game as opposed to making an impact, I think, here in their first week of play.
All right, guys, we had a bit of a snafu with our call monitoring program here. So I didn't realize I had two more people on hold. I would have gotten to the calls faster. So I will get to you now, but I'm going to have to ask you to be a little bit quick since we're past 1 o'clock already. So, Charlie, I think you've been holding the longest. Let's get to Charlie in Portland, Maine first. Hi, Charlie. Sorry about waiting for so long to take you.
Actually, it was a good thing the computer wasn't working.
What's going on, Charlie? How are you?
To secure the future, you have to secure the present. And presently,
Mr. Philosophy here.
We are not secure. And what I mean by that is that unless our general manager and coach is fired, it doesn't matter who's going to be picking. And the thing is, you got to understand is we're going to have a whole new regime in here picking the draft choices. And it's going to be a whole different eyeballs on Eric Flowers, on our offensive line, on players. And that's what we need. We need some eyeballs on these players. And I just want to say, guess who's back in the league?
I know.
Well, I know. Wait a minute. And how did you learn? Hold on a minute. Hold on a minute, Charlie.
He's one team, but he's not good enough to be signed for a 1-8 team.
Charlie, hold on. How did you find out? How did you find out that Will Beatty joined the Eagles? Yeah. Who told you on Twitter? Who told you on Charlie? I'm well aware that you were going to bring this narrative to the table. We were way ahead of you on that front, right? So don't pat yourself on the back. Statement number two here. First of all, Will Beatty hasn't played in about 2 years, number one. Jason Peters, their starting left tackle, went down a few weeks ago with an injury. They have not been very happy with his backup. They're in a position where they need options to toy with at that left tackle spot, especially since they're 8-1.
Bobby Hart has been playing so well.
Will Beatty, though, but they're using him as a left tackle, though. Let's look apples to apples here, Charlie, in fairness. Now you're all of a sudden talking about bringing him in and putting him back to right tackle where he played early in his career.
He played like four games at right tackle.
Yeah, like 10 years ago.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing. But wait a minute. How many games?
You guys didn't want to talk about him, John. You were one that he was washed up. But I guess an 8-1 team doesn't think he's washed up.
Charlie,
and that's all I got to say. And the other thing is, Greco, we brought him in week one. Why has it taken us like 9 weeks to bring this guy in?
Charlie, do you really think right now the offensive line is the problem? Seriously.
Well, he's going to find a way.
The problem. The only reason this offensive line is run blocking, John, because we had to change personnel. And the only reason we changed personnel was because they got injured. We would have had the same starting five guys that we had week one who couldn't run block worth a lick. But the reason why they can now is because we put Fluker in there, we moved Pugh over to the right side, and we put Jones as our center. That's the only reason.
Okay,
and everybody could have told you these five guys can't run block. And McAdoo didn't change the lineup until everybody got injured, and it was too late. And that is the issue. If we don't secure the present by dumping McAdoo and JR, we will never secure the future.
Well,
that's
you,
all I got to say, guys.
Well, Charlie, appreciate the phone call, but we want to get another phone call in quick. But, John, here goes. Bringing in Will Beattie, who's not a part of this offensive line, how is that going to yield the same results, though? That's what I don't understand about Charlie. Beattie.
And he wasn't a good run blocker anyway,
So why are we still focusing on Will Beattie would have been brought in and that would have changed the dynamics? I don't see that. And then DJ Fluker is the one that was inserted where the run blocking, I think, took a turn. So
you could argue Brett Jones.
Fine. So my point is, and you know, listen, John Greco's now providing depth. They're banged up in that area. But if Fluker and Jones have been providing the run blocking aid, then who's to say if John Greco was back here in week one that he would have provided the same impact? I guess my point is that Jones and Fluker have.
And
you just don't know if those dynamics are going to play out the same.
By the way, remember, too, as much as Fluker's helped in the run game, he's hurt you numerous times in the pass game,
yeah.
Giving up a couple of sack fumbles, actually, at the end
of the
game.
That's the give-and-take relationship.
Which actually cost the Giants two games at the end of these contests.
Well, the one against the Chargers, if I'm correct.
And then he had one a couple weeks later. I forget what the other game was, but he had one a couple weeks later, too. And the way the Giants play now, though, because of all the injuries of wide receiver, they're not a passing team anymore. When they were a passing team, you could have, if Eli Manning's throwing it 40 times a game, you can't have DJ Fluker be your right guard. It's going to get Eli killed.
I think that's a great point.
You know, now you want to run it 35 times a game, which is great. Now you can play him. So the way the team changed allowed you to change how you were going to play your offensive lineman too. All right, let's go to Len in Maryland for the final call of the show. Len, sorry for keeping me on hold again. Sorry about that.
Yeah, oh, that's okay. That's okay. And look, I had a lot to talk about, but I'm going to cut it. You know, cut it all the way down to about 10% of what I want to talk
that's
about.
Okay.
And end with a little levity, John, and we'll get to the other stuff next week.
Call
you know,
back
you
tomorrow.
Have the question of the day, John.
Yes, sir.
The question of the day: have you ever made a decision which you look back on and wondered how could I have done that? In my particular case, John, somebody would say there was a woman to blame. But in the end, it was my own damn fault that I made that decision.
Okay.
I'm stealing from Hank Williams Jr. Listen, guys, enjoy lunch. We'll talk next week. Thanks.
All right, Len. Wow. He follows Charlie with the philosophy today. I didn't think we were going
to
get so philosophical.
I'm trying to put one on one together. Is it going right over my head? Do you understand what he was talking
about? Well, I mean, I didn't necessarily connect the dots. The only thing I thought was he was relating to a mistake that was made perhaps in his personal life.
Right.
That's what he was reflecting on.
But
that's
I'm trying
the way
to figure out how
it.
He turned that back around to the Giants.
Well,
no?
I don't know
okay.
how exactly we're going to put that connected okay. to the Giants. And I don't want to read between the lines. We'll have Len call in at a later program, and he can
and Len,
provide the detective work.
And Len, if you want to call in tomorrow, please do so. Me and Paul Dottino on. I'll make sure I get you up first because, again, sorry about that. You and Charlie didn't show off my call or two. I would have made sure I got you earlier.
We're not apologizing for Charlie. We may be apologizing for Len. Let's at least be forthright here.
All right. Great job, everybody. Thanks for the calls. Thanks to Lance. Me and Dots tomorrow getting ready for Giants and Chiefs. We'll see you then. Have a good day on Giants.com. Take it easy.
Have a good one.